Hello, this is Jean at the Talking Information Center, reading news stories from Reuters for Thursday, December 18, 2025. Australia promises new hate laws as youngest Bondi Beach shooting victim is laid to rest. By Christine Chen, Scott Murdoch, and Alastair Powell. Sydney. Australian Prime Minister Anthony Albanese on Thursday promised a crackdown on hate speech in the wake of an attack on a Jewish holiday event at Sydney's Bondi Beach, as the youngest of 15 victims was laid to rest. Yellow toy bees topped the coffin of 10-year-old Matilda, who was remembered as a ray of sunshine, who loved animals and dancing. Matilda's middle name was Bee, which inspired attendees to wear bee stickers and bring bee-themed toys and balloons, while some mourners wore yellow. Matilda's family has asked the media not to use their surname. The tragic, so totally cruel, unfathomable murder of young Matilda is something to all of us as if our own daughter was taken from us, said Rabbi Yehoram Ullman. Matilda grew up like a child would, loving what children love. She loved the outdoors, animals. She went to school. She had friends. Everybody loved her. The alleged father and son gunman opened fire as hundreds of people celebrated Hanukkah on Sydney's famous Bondi Beach on Sunday. The attack, which shocked the nation and led to fears over rising anti-Semitism, appears to have been inspired by Islamic State, authorities say. The line outside the hall where Matilda's funeral was held at noon in Sydney's eastern suburbs snaked down the street. Many mourners who could not get in watched the service on a screen outside the building. Some were angry at the government, saying it had not done enough to combat a rise in anti-Semitism since the start of the war in Gaza. "It's like your heart's been ripped out. It's terrible. No one wants this," said Jay Glover, 25, as he handed out bee stickers. "It's a feeling it could have been avoided. Anti-Semitism has now been brewing in Australia for over 2 years." As Matilda's small white coffin was carried to a hearse at the end of the funeral, people gathered around to say their final goodbyes. Among the crowd was Matilda's younger sister, Summer, clutching a small bumblebee toy in her hands while being comforted by her father. "As the coffin was driving away, I was just whispering, 'I'm so sorry, my baby, because I have 5 babies. We failed this baby,'" said Chana Friedman, 37. Elena Margoleva said the service was heartbreaking and devastating, and that she had not been eating or sleeping since the attack. "I can't come to terms with how this could possibly happen." A funeral for the shooting's eldest victim, 87-year-old Holocaust survivor Alex Kleitman, was held earlier at the same hall. Tibor Whiteson, 78, and Reuven Morrison, 62, were also laid to rest on Thursday. Albanese said the government will seek to introduce legislation that makes it easier to charge people promoting hate speech and violence. Penalties would be increased, canceling or refusing visas would be made easier, and a regime for targeting organizations whose leaders engage in hate speech would be developed, he said. "Australians are shocked and angry. I am angry. It is clear we need to do more to combat this evil scourge, much more," Albanese told a news conference announcing the reforms. Albanese's government has said it has consistently denounced anti-Semitism over the last 2 years. It passed legislation to criminalize hate speech, and in August it expelled the Iranian ambassador after accusing Tehran of directing 2 anti-Semitic arson attacks in the cities of Sydney and Melbourne. Still, anti-Semitic incidents are mounting. A 19-year-old Sydney man was charged and will face court on Thursday after allegedly threatening violence towards a Jewish person on a flight from Bali to Sydney on Wednesday. Police will allege the man made anti-Semitic threats and hand gestures indicating violence towards the alleged victim, who the man knew to be affiliated with the Jewish community, Australian Federal Police said on Thursday. Police allege the attack was carried out by Sajid Akram, 50, and his 24-year-old son, Navid. Sajid was shot dead by police at the scene, while Navid Akram was charged with 59 offenses, including murder and terror charges, on Wednesday after waking from a coma. His case has been adjourned until April 2026, the court confirmed on Thursday. The center-left Labour government has ruled out holding a royal commission, a high-level inquiry with judicial powers, into the shootings for now. On Wednesday, the leader of New South Wales, where the attacks took place, said he would next week recall the state parliament to pass urgent reforms on gun laws. Police are looking into Australia-based Islamic State networks, as well as the gunman's alleged links to militants in the Philippines. The Philippines National Security Council on Wednesday said that while Sajid Akram and his son had been in the country for a month in November, the pair had not engaged in any military training. Islamic State-linked networks are known to operate in the Philippines and have wielded some influence in the south of the country. There is no valid report or confirmation that the two received any form of military training while in the country, and no evidence supports such a claim at present, Philippine National Security Advisor Eduardo Ano said in a statement. Crunch EU summit to decide on using frozen Russian assets for Ukraine. By Andrew Gray, Lily Beyer, and Jan Strubczewski. Brussels. European Union leaders were trying to overcome differences on whether to use frozen Russian assets to finance Ukraine's war effort at a fraught summit on Thursday, seen as a critical test of the bloc's strength. The EU sees Russia's war as a threat to its own security and wants to keep Ukraine financed and fighting. "We just can't afford to fail. We have to show that we are strong," EU Foreign Policy Chief Kaja Kallas said, adding that leaders would stay at the Brussels summit as long as needed to find a solution. With public finances across the EU already strained by high debt levels, the European Commission has proposed using frozen Russian central bank assets that are mostly held in a Belgian clearinghouse to secure a huge loan to Kyiv. But Belgium is deeply concerned about being left exposed to legal and financial risks, and other states, including Italy, have also expressed worries. EU leaders arriving at the summit said it was imperative they find a solution. They were also keen to show European countries' strength and resolve after U.S. President Donald Trump last week called them weak. "Now we have a simple choice, either money today or blood tomorrow, and I am not talking about Ukraine only, I am talking about Europe," Polish Prime Minister Donald Tusk said. "All European leaders have to finally rise to this occasion." Briefing reporters later in the day, Tusk said leaders agreed that they should work on a loan rather than other options, but stressed that they had many hours of increasingly technical discussions ahead of them to reassure Belgium and others. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, who took part in the summit, urged EU leaders to reach a deal, saying it was the right thing to do and would allow Ukraine to keep fighting. "Just like authorities confiscate money from drug traffickers and seize weapons from terrorists, Russian assets must be used to defend against Russian aggression and rebuild what was destroyed by Russian attacks. It's moral, it's fair, it's legal," he said. Belgian Prime Minister Bart De Wever told his country's parliament that he had not yet seen guarantees that answered his concerns on legal and liquidity risks, and that financing plans were still changing as we speak. Russia's central bank has said the EU plans to use its assets are illegal and reserved the right to use all available means to protect its interests. It filed a lawsuit in Moscow this week seeking $230 billion in damages from clearinghouse Euroclear. The stakes are high because without the EU's financial help, Ukraine will run out of money in the second quarter of next year and most likely lose the war to Russia, which the EU fears would bring closer to the threat of Russian aggression against the bloc. Kallas said she saw chances of a deal on the assets at 50-50. German Chancellor Friedrich Merz said, "My impression is that we can come to an agreement." Sweden's Prime Minister Ulf Kristersson said this was the most important EU summit since the war in Ukraine started. "I believe and hope that we can find technical solutions to the issues that Belgium still has outstanding, but I would like to emphasize that we are not there yet," he said. Another option could have been for the EU to borrow the needed amount against the security of the EU budget and then lend the money on to Ukraine. But such a move would require unanimity among the 27 EU countries, and Moscow-friendly Hungary has already said it would veto it. Diplomats said the use of the Russian assets was therefore, in practice, the only game in town. But to use it, EU leaders first need to convince Belgium, which holds 185 billion euros of the total 210 billion euros frozen in Europe, that they will not leave it alone with the bill if Russia successfully sues in international courts over the plan. Russia jails man for 22 years for blowing up trains in Siberia at Ukraine's behest. By Reuters. Moscow. A Belarusian man accused by Russia's FSB security service of blowing up two trains in Siberia on the orders of Ukraine's intelligence services was jailed for 22 years on Thursday by a military court. Sergei Yeremeyev was found guilty of carrying out an act of terrorism and of planting explosives on two freight trains in 2023, one of which was traveling through Russia's longest conventional rail tunnel at the time, the general prosecutor said in a statement. The FSB said at the time of his arrest that Yeremeyev had admitted his guilt. The two attacks in Russia's Buryatia region, which borders Mongolia and is thousands of miles from Ukraine, were claimed at the time by the Security Service of Ukraine, SBU, which said it wanted to disrupt railway lines in Siberia, which it said Russia used for military supplies. In the first attack on November 29, 2023, explosives were detonated on a cargo train that was moving through the Severomoysky Tunnel, which is 9.5 miles long, and on the Balkai-Amur mainline railway. The second attack, a day later, hit a freight train as it crossed the Chertov Bridge in the same region, on a railway line used as a backup when trains are diverted from the Severomoysky Tunnel. The attacks caused damage equivalent to 102 million rubles, $1.2 million, and disrupted train traffic, the general prosecutor said. Yeremeyev will serve the first 5 years of his sentence in jail before being transferred to a maximum security correctional prison camp, it said in a statement. Russia is preparing for contacts with the United States on Ukraine, the Kremlin says, by Reuters. Moscow. The Kremlin said on Thursday that Russia was preparing for contacts with the United States to get details about U.S. talks with European powers and Ukraine on a possible peace settlement to end the Ukraine conflict. Politico reported that U.S. and Russian officials are expected to meet in Miami at the weekend, and that the Russian delegation would include Russian President Vladimir Putin's investment envoy, Kirill Dmitriev. When asked about media reports about a meeting in Miami, Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov told reporters that contacts were planned with the United States. "We are indeed preparing certain contacts with our American counterparts in order to receive information about the results of the work that the Americans have done with the Europeans and with Ukraine," Peskov said. The United States has held talks with Russia and separately with Kyiv and European leaders on proposals for ending the war in Ukraine, but no deal has been reached. Putin said on Wednesday that Russia would take more land in Ukraine by force if Kyiv and European politicians, whom he cast as young pigs, did not engage over U.S. proposals for a peace settlement. European leaders say they stand with Kyiv and that if Russia wins in Ukraine, then Moscow will one day attack a NATO member. The Kremlin has repeatedly dismissed claims that Russia would attack a NATO member as nonsense. Russia controls 19.2% of Ukraine, including the Crimea Peninsula, which it annexed in 2014, as well as most of the eastern Donbas region, most of the Kherson and Zaporizhia regions, and slivers of four other regions. Saudi, French, and U.S. officials push Hezbollah disarmament plan, by John Irish and Jana Chukir. Paris, Beirut. French, Saudi Arabian, and American officials held talks with the head of the Lebanese army on Thursday in Paris aimed at finalizing a roadmap to enable a mechanism for the disarmament of the Hezbollah group, diplomats said. Israel and Lebanon agreed to a U.S.-brokered ceasefire in 2024, ending more than a year of fighting between Israel and Hezbollah that severely weakened the Iran-backed militants. Since then, the sides have traded accusations over violations, with Israel questioning the Lebanese army's efforts to disarm Hezbollah. Israeli warplanes have increasingly targeted Hezbollah in southern Lebanon and even in the capital. Speaking after the meeting, France's foreign ministry spokesperson Pascal Canfavreau said the talks had agreed to document seriously with evidence the Lebanese army's efforts to disarm Hezbollah, as well as strengthening the existing ceasefire mechanism. With growing fear the ceasefire could unravel, the Paris meeting aimed to create more robust conditions to identify, support, and verify the disarmament process and dissuade Israel from escalation, four European and Lebanese diplomats and officials told Reuters. With legislative elections due in Lebanon in 2026, there are fears political paralysis and party politics will further fuel instability and make President Joseph Aoun less likely to press disarmament, the diplomats and officials said. The situation is extremely precarious, full of contradictions, and it won't take much to light the powder keg, said one senior official, speaking on condition of anonymity. Aoun doesn't want to make the disarming process too public because he fears it will antagonize and provoke tensions with the Shiite community in the south of the country. With the Lebanese army lacking capacity to disarm Hezbollah, the idea would be to reinforce the existing ceasefire mechanism with French, U.S., and possibly other military experts, along with U.N. peacekeeping forces, the diplomats and officials said. The parties agreed to hold a conference in February to reinforce the Lebanese army, Confavreau said. As officials convened for the talks, multiple Israeli strikes hit towns in southern Lebanon and areas of the Bekaa Valley on Thursday, Lebanon's state news agency NNA reported. The Israeli military said it struck Hezbollah targets across several areas, including a military compound used for training, weapons storage, and artillery launches, saying the activity violated understandings between Israel and Lebanon and posed a threat to Israel. It also said it struck a Hezbollah militant in the area of Taibeh in southern Lebanon. Commenting on the attacks, Parliament Speaker and Hezbollah-allied Amal movement leader Nabi Berri said the strikes were an Israeli message to the Paris conference, NNA added. UN aid groups warn Gaza operations at risk from Israel impediments. By Michelle Nichols. United Nations. The United Nations and aid groups warned on Wednesday that humanitarian operations in the Palestinian territories, particularly Gaza, were at risk of collapse if Israel does not lift impediments that include a vague, arbitrary, and highly politicized registration process. Dozens of international aid groups face deregistration by December 31, which then means they have to close operations within 60 days, said the UN, and more than 200 local and international aid groups in a joint statement. The deregistration of INGOs, international aid groups, in Gaza will have a catastrophic impact on access to essential and basic services, the statement read. INGOs run or support the majority of field hospitals, primary health care centers, emergency shelter responses, water and sanitation services, nutrition stabilization centers for children with acute malnutrition, and critical mine action activities, it said. While some international aid groups have been registered under the system that was introduced in March, the ongoing re-registration process and other arbitrary hindrances to humanitarian operations have left millions of dollars worth of essential supplies, including food, medical items, hygiene, materials, and shelter assistance, stuck outside of Gaza and unable to reach people in need, the statement read. Israel's mission to the United States in New York did not immediately respond to a request for comment on the statement. Under the first phase of U.S. President Donald Trump's Gaza plan, a fragile ceasefire in the two-year-old war between Israel and Palestinian militants Hamas began on October 10. Hamas released hostages, Israel freed detained Palestinians, and more aid began flowing into the enclave, where a global hunger monitor said in August famine had taken hold. However, Hamas says fewer aid trucks are entering Gaza than was agreed. Aid agencies say there is far less aid than required and that Israel is blocking many necessary items from coming in. Israel denies that and says it is abiding by its obligations under the truce. The UN will not be able to compensate for the collapse of INGOs' operations if they are deregistered, and the humanitarian response cannot be replaced by alternative actors operating outside established humanitarian principles, the statement by the UN and aid groups said. The statement stressed, humanitarian access is not optional, conditional, or political, adding, life-saving assistance must be allowed to reach Palestinians without further delay. Families of jailed pro-Palestinian activists on hunger strike urge UK government to act. By Katarina De Moni. London. Families, lawyers, and supporters of the detained pro-Palestinian activists who are on hunger strike in Britain issued an urgent plea to the government on Thursday, warning that their loved ones face life-threatening danger. Eight people have joined the hunger strike, some from its start in early November, and lawyers said the health of the remaining six, aged 20 to 31, was deteriorating and that death was likely unless the government intervenes. One of the six is on partial hunger strike due to diabetes-related health concerns. Kesser Zura was taken to hospital on Wednesday after 46 days without food, according to campaign group Defend Our Juries. His heart is giving in and his pulse is slowing down, so what are we waiting for? Said Shamina Alam, whose brother, 28-year-old Kamran Ahmed, has been on hunger strike for 39 days. We call on the government to meet with us urgently because the lives of the hunger strikers are in their hands. Four of the activists were jailed over alleged involvement in a break-in at an Israeli-linked defense firm last year, while another four were accused of breaching a military airbase in central England and damaging two aircraft in protest against Britain's support for Israel. All have been charged with offenses allegedly carried out on behalf of Palestine Action before the group was banned and designated a terrorist organization. A spokesperson for Prime Minister Keir Starmer told reporters on Thursday the government was continuing to monitor the well-being of those on hunger strike. Palestine Action was banned in July, putting it on a par with Islamic State or Al-Qaeda and making it a crime to be a member, which carries a maximum sentence of 14 years in prison. Thousands have since been arrested for holding signs in support of the group. Official figures show that of the 1,886 terrorism-related arrests in the UK for the year ending September 2025, 1,630 were linked to support for Palestine Action. The activists on hunger strike have spent more than a year in pre-trial detention, and their demands include immediate bail, an end to the ban on Palestine Action, and to be able to communicate without censorship. Supporters argue they should not be held in custody without a trial. Sarajevo takes steps on air quality after most polluted city ranking. By Darya Sito-Sucic. Sarajevo. Sarajevo authorities issued an air quality warning and imposed a ban on some cars and trucks on Wednesday after it was ranked as the world's most polluted city on the two previous evenings by Swiss air quality monitoring firm IQ Air. The Sarajevo cantonal government took action after the quality of the air in the Bosnian capital reached hazardous levels following several days of fog and smog that have blanketed the city of about 350,000 people. It banned trucks of over 3.5 tons and cars and trucks that do not meet standards set by the European Union from driving in the city and prohibited construction work in open areas. Public gatherings in the open were also banned. Experts say the main sources of pollution are about 40,000 households that mainly use firewood and coal for winter heating and transport. Only 500 households have received gas stoves thanks to international aid, said Anes Podic of environmental organization Eko Acica, adding that 180,000 vehicles were registered in Sarajevo. The city, nestled in a valley surrounded by mountains and hills, has long suffered from a phenomenon known as temperature inversion, which presses colder air and pollutants from vehicles and fossil fuels closer to the ground. Mixed with fog, it can stick around for days. Bosnia has among the highest levels of fine particulate matter, PM2.5, pollution in Europe, to which the burning of solid fuel for home heating and the transport sector contribute about 50% and 20% respectively, according to the World Bank. Enes Kresinic, an expert at the Hydrometeorological Institute of Bosnia's Autonomous Bosniak-Croat Federation, said the permitted amount of PM2.5 had been exceeded over 100 days a year. According to World Health Organization data, Bosnia has the fifth highest mortality rate from air pollution in the world. The World Bank estimates that PM2.5 air pollution causes 3,300 premature deaths every year and the loss of over 8% of GDP in Bosnia. Aida Forto, a lung specialist, said long-term exposure to air pollution, and especially to fine particulate matters, can contribute to lung cancer, and is particularly dangerous for pregnant women, children, the elderly, and people with chronic diseases. Europe's auto industry future may be electric even after EU climb down, by Nick Carey. London. Brussels' proposal to abandon a 2035 deadline for a total shift to fully electric driving allows Europe's legacy carmakers more time to sell hybrids, but for the longer term, EVs are still the future, analysts and experts said. On Tuesday, the European Commission published plans to abandon an effective 2035 ban on combustion engine cars after lobbying from the region's auto sector, helping them better compete against fast-moving Chinese rivals. Plug-in hybrids, range-extended EVs, which use a small combustion engine to recharge the battery, and even conventional engines would remain legal beyond 2035. Brussels also proposed a new category of small EVs with extra credits for models built in Europe, concessions that industry analysts say deliver much of what car makers lobbied for. The Commission has allowed Europe's car industry to make choices and have a chance to compete, said Phil Dunn, a managing director at consultancy Grant Thornton Stacks. Hopefully it allows Europe's industry to catch up with the Chinese with cost-competitive EVs, he added. Premium brands such as Mercedes and BMW will have longer to sell plug-in hybrids before selling only full EVs. With a wide range of smaller models such as the Fiat 500 and Clio, Stellantis and Renault should benefit from the new subsidized category of small EVs for the continent's city dwellers. The EU's stance is very different to that of the United States, where President Donald Trump has withdrawn support for EVs. Last year, Brussels imposed tariffs on Chinese-made EVs, but it has done little to stop brands like Changan expanding in Europe. BYD and other Chinese companies face no tariffs on imported plug-in hybrids, and a number of Chinese companies sell combustion engine models in markets, including Poland, where EV sales are low. Before Tuesday's news, consultancy Alex Partners forecast Europe's fully electric cars would only make up 62% of sales by 2035 because it was not convinced the ban could be enforced. Partner Nick Parker said he did not expect any major changes to the consultancy's forecast. A slower transition to electric would, however, give markets time to build charging infrastructure, one of the main reasons for the slow take-up of EVs. EU fully electric car sales rose by 25.7% year-on-year through October, accounting for 16.4% of all sales, according to industry data. They make up a tiny portion of overall sales in Southern and Eastern Europe. The change in policy is a blow for automakers and suppliers that have spent tens of billions of euros designing electric cars and expanding factory capacity based on EU policy that only became law in 2023. But allowing traditional automakers to use different technologies may spur them to partner on developing affordable EVs, such as the tie-up between Ford and Renault made public last week to develop small EVs in Europe. The day before the EU announcement, the U.S. automaker made public a $19.5 billion write-down and plans to scrap several electric models. This will end up driving more cooperation and platform sharing between automakers, said Joe Stevenson, CEO of British startup Anaphyte, which is developing dry coating for battery electrodes that could cut the cost of an EV. Ahead of Tuesday's news, Ford CEO Jim Farley urged Brussels to pick one policy and stick to it, rather than shifting every few months. As recently as March, the Commission gave the car industry breathing space by allowing automakers to comply with the 2025 emissions targets over 3 years, with further changes 9 months later. "That's not the way to do long-term capital investment planning," Farley said. "We need certainty." How China built its Manhattan Project to rival the West in AI chips, by Franny Potkin. Singapore. In a high-security Shenzhen laboratory, Chinese scientists have built what Washington has spent years trying to prevent, a prototype of a machine capable of producing the cutting-edge semiconductor chips that power artificial intelligence, smartphones, and weapons central to Western military dominance, Reuters has learned. Completed in early 2025 and now undergoing testing, the prototype fills nearly an entire factory floor. It was built by a team of former engineers from Dutch semiconductor giant ASML, who reverse-engineered the company's extreme ultraviolet lithography machines, or EUVs, according to two people with knowledge of the project. EUV machines sit at the heart of a technological Cold War. They use beams of extreme ultraviolet light to etch circuits thousands of times thinner than a human hair onto silicon wafers, currently a capability monopolized by the West. The smaller the circuits, the more powerful the chips. China's machine is operational and successfully generating extreme ultraviolet light, but has not yet produced working chips, the people said. In April, ASML CEO Christophe Fouquet said that China would need many, many years to develop such technology. But the existence of this prototype, reported by Reuters for the first time, suggests China may be years closer to achieving semiconductor independence than analysts anticipated. Nevertheless, China still faces major technical challenges, particularly in replicating the precision optical systems that Western suppliers produce. The availability of parts from older ASML machines on secondary markets has allowed China to build a domestic prototype, with the government setting a goal of producing working chips on the prototype by 2028, according to the two people. But those close to the project say a more realistic target is 2030, which is still years earlier than the decade that analysts believed it would take China to match the West on chips. Chinese authorities did not respond to requests for comment. The breakthrough marks the culmination of a 6-year government initiative to achieve semiconductor self-sufficiency, one of President Xi Jinping's highest priorities. While China's semiconductor goals have been public, the Shenzhen EUV project has been conducted in secret, according to the people. The project falls under the country's semiconductor strategy, which state media has identified as being run by Xi Jinping confidant Deng Xiaoxiang, who heads the Communist Party's Central Science and Technology Commission. Chinese electronics giant Huawei plays a key role coordinating a web of companies and state research institutes across the country involving thousands of engineers, according to the two people and a third source. The people described it as China's version of the Manhattan Project, the U.S. wartime effort to develop the atomic bomb. The aim is for China to eventually be able to make advanced chips and machines that are entirely China-made, one of the people said. China wants the United States 100% kicked out of its supply chains. Huawei, the State Council of China, the Chinese Embassy in Washington, and China's Ministry of Industry and Information Technology did not respond to requests for comment. Until now, only one company has mastered EUV technology, ASML, headquartered in Veldhoven, Netherlands. Its machines, which cost around $250 million, are indispensable for manufacturing the most advanced chips designed by companies like NVIDIA and AMD, and produced by chipmakers such as TSMC, Intel, and Samsung. ASML built its first working prototype of EUV technology in 2001 and told Reuters it took nearly two decades and billions of euros in R&D spending before it produced its first commercially available chips in 2019. It makes sense that companies would want to replicate our technology, but doing so is no small feat, ASML told Reuters in a statement. ASML's EUV systems are currently available to U.S. allies, including Taiwan, South Korea, and Japan. Starting in 2018, the United States began pressuring the Netherlands to block ASML from selling EUV systems to China. The restrictions expanded in 2022 when the Biden administration imposed sweeping export controls designed to cut off China's access to advanced semiconductor technology. No EUV system has ever been sold to a customer in China, ASML told Reuters. The controls targeted not just EUV systems, but also older deep ultraviolet, DUV, lithography machines that produce less advanced chips like Huawei's, aiming to keep China at least a generation behind in chipmaking capabilities. The U.S. State Department said the Trump administration has strengthened enforcement of export controls on advanced semiconductor manufacturing equipment and is working with partners to close loopholes as technology advances. The Dutch Ministry of Defense said the Netherlands is developing policies requiring knowledge institutions to perform personnel screenings to prevent access to sensitive technology by individuals that have ill intentions or who are at risk of being pressured. Export restrictions have slowed China's progress toward semiconductor self-sufficiency for years and constrained advanced chip production at Huawei, the two people and a third person said. The sources spoke on condition they not be identified due to the confidentiality of the project. One veteran Chinese engineer from ASML recruited to the project was surprised to find that his generous signing bonus came with an identification card issued under a false name, according to one of the people who was familiar with his recruitment. Once inside, he recognized other former ASML colleagues who were also working under aliases and was instructed to use their fake names at work to maintain secrecy, the person said. Another person independently confirmed that recruits were given fake IDs to conceal their identities from other workers inside the secure facility. The guidance was clear, the two people said. Classified under national security, no one outside the compound could know what they were building or that they were there at all. The team includes recently retired Chinese-born former ASML engineers and scientists, prime recruitment targets because they possess sensitive technical knowledge but face fewer professional constraints after leaving the company, the people said. Two current ASML employees of Chinese nationality in the Netherlands told Reuters they have been approached by recruiters from Huawei since at least 2020. Huawei did not respond to requests for comment. European privacy laws limit ASML's ability to track former employees, though employees sign non-disclosure agreements, enforcing them across borders has proven difficult. ASML won an $845 million judgment in 2019 against a former Chinese engineer accused of stealing trade secrets, but the defendant filed for bankruptcy and continues to operate in Beijing with Chinese government support, according to court documents. ASML told Reuters that it vigilantly guards trade secrets and confidential information. While ASML cannot control or restrict where former employees work, all employees are bound by the confidentiality clauses in their contracts, the company said, and it has successfully pursued legal action in response to the theft of trade secrets. Reuters was unable to determine if any legal actions have been taken against former ASML employees involved in China's lithography program. The company said it safeguards EUV knowledge by ensuring only select employees can access the information, even inside the company. Dutch intelligence warned in an April report that China used extensive espionage programs in its attempts to obtain advanced technology and knowledge from Western countries, including recruiting Western scientists and employees of high-tech companies. The ASML veterans made the breakthrough in Shenzhen possible, the people said. Without their intimate knowledge of the technology, reverse engineering the machines would have been nearly impossible. Their recruitment was part of an aggressive drive China launched in 2019 for semiconductor experts working abroad, offering signing bonuses that started at 3 million to 5 million yuan, $420,000 to $700,000, and home purchase subsidies, according to a Reuters review of government policy documents. Recruits included Lin Nan, ASML's former head of light source technology, whose team at the Chinese Academy of Sciences Shanghai Institute of Optics has filed 8 patents on EUV light sources in 18 months, according to patent filings. The Shanghai Institute of Optics and Fine Mechanics did not respond to requests for comment. Lin could not be reached for comment. 2 additional people familiar with China's recruitment efforts said some naturalized citizens of other countries were given Chinese passports and allowed to maintain dual citizenship. China officially prohibits dual citizenship and did not answer questions on issuing passports. Chinese authorities did not respond to requests for comment. ASML's most advanced EU systems are roughly the size of a school bus and weigh 180 tons. After failed attempts to replicate its size, the prototype inside the Shenzhen lab became many times larger to improve its power, according to the 2 people. The Chinese prototype is crude compared to ASML's machines, but operational enough for testing, the people said. China's prototype lags behind ASML's machines largely because researchers have struggled to obtain optical systems like those from Germany's Carl Zeiss AG, one of ASML's key suppliers, the 2 people said. Zeiss declined to comment. The machines fire lasers at molten tin 50,000 times per second, generating plasma at 200,000 degrees Celsius. The light is focused using mirrors that take months to produce, according to Zeiss's website. China's top research institutes have played key roles in developing homegrown alternatives, according to the 2 people. The Changchun Institute of Optics, Fine Mechanics, and Physics at the Chinese Academy of Sciences, CIOMP, achieved a breakthrough in integrating extreme ultraviolet light into the prototype's optical system, enabling it to become operational in early 2025, the people said, though the optics still require significant refinement. CIOMP did not respond to requests for comment. In a March online recruitment call on its website, the institute said it was offering uncapped salaries to PhD lithography research and research grants worth up to 4 million yuan, $560,000, plus 1 million yuan, $140,000, in personal subsidies. Jeff Koch, an analyst at research firm SemiAnalysis and a former ASML engineer, said China will have achieved meaningful progress if the light source has enough power, is reliable, and doesn't generate too much contamination. No doubt this is technically feasible, it's just a question of timeline, he said. China has the advantage that commercial EUV now exists, so they aren't starting from zero. While the EUV project is run by the Chinese government, Huawei is involved in every step of the supply chain, from chip design and fabrication equipment to manufacturing and final integration into products like smartphones, according to 4 people familiar with Huawei's operations. CEO Ren Zhengfei briefs senior Chinese leaders on progress, according to one of the people. The U.S. placed Huawei on an entity list in 2019, banning American companies from doing business with them without a license. Huawei has deployed employees to offices, fabrication plants, and research centers across the country for the effort. Employees assigned to semiconductor teams often sleep on site and are barred from returning home during the work week, with phone access restricted for teams handling more sensitive tasks, according to the people. Inside Huawei, few employees know the scope of this work. The teams are kept isolated from each other to protect the confidentiality of the project, one of the people said. They don't know what the other teams work on. In the U.S., Trump claims he's cut energy costs. Has he? By Reuters. U.S. President Donald Trump took credit during his White House speech on Wednesday night for reducing gasoline prices, increasing power generation, and boosting the coal industry. Here's a fact check. Gasoline prices. Trump said, "Gasoline is now under $2.50 a gallon in much of the country. In some states, it, by the way, just hit $1.99 a gallon." The facts. The national average price for a gallon of gasoline is $2.89, down from $3.03 a year ago, according to AAA's daily survey. The lowest prices can be found in Oklahoma, where the statewide average is $2.34, according to AAA. The price of gasoline is closely tied to the price of its feedstock crude oil, which has been pressured in recent months by OPEC production increases and slowing economic growth. Power generation. Trump said, "Within the next 12 months, we will have opened 1,600 electrical generating plants, and it's a record that won't be beaten by, I would say, by anybody, or certainly not very soon. Prices on electricity and everything else will fall dramatically." The facts. Power prices are rising fast, and amid a proliferation of new electricity-hungry data centers behind AI, a key reason why Trump and his predecessor Joe Biden want to expand America's power generation. The U.S. Energy Information Administration, the statistical wing of the Department of Energy, expects that U.S. power generation will have grown by 2.4% in 2025 and another 1.7% in 2026. That growth reverses shrinking U.S. power generation that had occurred between 2010 and 2020, a period when electricity demand was flat. The EIA data shows, however, that the fastest growth in new generation is coming from solar and wind projects. Many of those projects had been in the pipeline for years and had benefited from federal subsidies that Trump has since cut. Trump's administration wants to reduce renewable energy's share and boost oil, gas, coal, and nuclear technologies instead. Coal revival. Trump said in his speech that his administration was bringing back clean, beautiful coal and was raising the take-home pay of miners. "After years of record-setting falling incomes, our policies are boosting take-home pay at a historic pace. For miners, we're bringing back clean, beautiful coal. It's $3,300. The facts. Employment in the coal industry was around 41,200 in November, down from 42,300 a year earlier, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. The average hourly earnings of miners was around $35.72 in October, up from $35.65 a year earlier, according to the data. Coal consumption in the United States, meanwhile, was expected to increase by 9% in 2025, driven by an 11% increase in demand from the electric power sector, according to the EIA. Coal consumption is expected to fall in 2026 as electric power generation from renewable sources increases, however. In holiday speech, Trump highlights victories amid sinking approval ratings. By Steve Holland, Jeff Mason, and Trevor Honeycutt. In a rare evening address from the White House, U.S. President Donald Trump boasted on Wednesday of his accomplishments and blamed his Democratic predecessor for soaring consumer prices as his party braces for a tough midterm election next year. 11 months ago, I inherited a mess, and I'm fixing it, Trump said in a speech that lasted less than 20 minutes and was delivered at a jarringly rapid-fire pace. The Republican president, who regularly protests that he does not get credit for his accomplishments, offered few new policy initiatives to address high costs. The speech instead was delivered with a pronounced sense of grievance, with Trump complaining about migrant invasions, violent crime, and transgender rights in the White House's diplomatic reception room festooned with holiday decor. He placed blame at the feet of former President Joe Biden, previous trade deals, immigrants, and what he described as a corrupt system. At the same time, Trump touted his administration's work this year on a range of issues, from reducing border crossings to bringing down prices of some goods, and he promised the nation would be stronger next year. Among the few policy initiatives, Trump announced his administration would send a warrior dividend of $1,776 to 1.45 million U.S. service members in the coming week. He also backed a Republican proposal to send cash directly to the public to offset the cost of health insurance rather than provide subsidies through the Affordable Care Act. That proposal has yet to receive enough support in Congress. "I want the money to go directly to the people so you can buy your own health care," Trump said. "The only losers will be the insurance companies." Surprisingly, he spent little time addressing foreign affairs, a subject that occupied much of his first year back in office. He made a passing reference to the war in Gaza, but made no mention of the war in Ukraine or the brewing conflict with Venezuela. The address offered an opportunity for the president to address people's concerns about affordability, an issue that Trump has repeatedly referred to as a Democratic hoax. While casting blame on Biden's presidency, Trump conceded that prices remain high, but argued the nation was poised for an economic boom. "I am bringing those high prices down and bringing them down very fast," he said. He pledged conditions would improve in the coming year, citing his tax policies, tariffs, and plans to replace the chairman of the Federal Reserve, Jerome Powell. That timetable would come as welcome news to Trump's fellow Republicans, who are seeking to maintain control of the House of Representatives and Senate in November elections next year. Nearly a year before elections, Democrats are already highlighting affordability concerns and differences over health care policy. Trump campaigned on the economy, effectively leveraging the high inflation of Biden's presidency to beat former Vice President Kamala Harris in last year's election. As president, Trump's tariff policies this year have created uncertainty and lifted prices in an economy that has now been overseen by his administration for nearly a year, and Trump, like Biden before him, has been struggling to persuade Americans that the economy is healthy. A new Reuters Ipsos poll on Tuesday showed just 33% of U.S. adults approve of how Trump has handled the economy. After the speech, Democrats contended Trump had offered Americans few solutions to their concerns. Senator Mark Warner of Virginia called the address a sad attempt at distraction, while California Governor Gavin Newsom, a potential 2028 presidential contender, simply posted the word "me," referring to Trump, more than 700 times. In his remarks, Trump said he had attracted $18 trillion in investments that will create jobs and open factories. He credited his tariff policy as a leading factor. "One year ago, our country was dead. Now we're the hottest country anywhere in the world." The speech came just a day before a closely watched update on inflation from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. After touching a four-year low of 2.3% in April, just 3 months into Trump's second term, annual inflation since then has been grinding higher. Broadly, recent government data has shown that the economy's growth has rebounded somewhat after it contracted during the first few months of the year. Yet it also shows that job growth has slowed during Trump's second term, unemployment has risen to its highest level in 4 years, and consumer prices remain high. Brown University gunman could be anywhere on fifth day of manhunt by Rich McKay and Helen Koster. The gunman who killed two Brown University students remained at large on Wednesday, and there was no indication that authorities have grown closer to identifying the suspect 4 days after he opened fire inside a classroom and escaped into the surrounding streets in Providence, Rhode Island. It is rare but not unprecedented for the perpetrator of a high-profile attack to evade capture for multiple days. But the lack of any identification has left people in the area on edge, with some staying behind locked doors and keeping their kids home from school. "This is outside of the norm," said Felipe Rodriguez, a former New York police detective who now teaches at the City University of New York's John Jay College of Criminal Justice. "Mass shooters, by large, are usually killed at the scene or quickly captured." Investigators have released security camera images of a masked man they believe to be the suspect, based on witness accounts from survivors, but admit they still do not know who he is or what his motive may have been. "He could be anywhere," Providence Police Chief Oscar Perez said of the killer at a press conference on Wednesday. "We still don't know who the person is or where he is." Perez called the manhunt probably the most intense investigation that we have in this nation. Providence Mayor Brett Smiley told the same press conference he shared the feelings of the city's residents and Brown students who were restless and eager for an arrest. At least 8 other people were wounded in the attack. 6 of them remain hospitalized. On Wednesday, police published grainy photos of another unidentified man who they said was in the vicinity of the suspected shooter, and have asked the public to help identify him. The images show a man wearing a jacket over a hooded sweatshirt, his face visible, walking along a street. "This is a person we would like to speak with," Perez said, describing him as someone who may have information relevant to the investigation. Early on Sunday, a day after the shooting, investigators appeared to have broken the case open when they announced a person was in custody, but authorities released the unarmed man in his 20s that evening after evidence showed he was not involved. Officials said on Tuesday the investigation has been hampered by a lack of security cameras in the building and in the nearby area. Investigators have released video clips, mostly taken from residential doorbell cameras, showing the possible shooter walking in a neighborhood near campus both before and immediately after the attack. In one video, the person can be seen walking away from the building right after the shooting as police cars with flashing lights arrive on the scene. While the man in the video is masked, officials hope someone might recognize his body, gait, movements, or posture. Perez again called on people who live nearby to check their security cameras for any possible sightings of the suspect. That concludes this Thursday's reading from Reuters. My name is Jean, and it's been a pleasure to read for you.